and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As the conflict in Ukraine continues, so does the information war. The liberal West appears determined to deny any meaningful debate about the conflict. Freedom of expression is now something of the past. And an information iron curtain has descended. Crosstalking the information war, I'm joined by my guest, Anya Perrenpell in Washington. She is a journalist with The Gray Zone. In Nashville, we have Scotty Nell Hughes. She's a political strategist and former presenter on RT America. And in Istanbul, we cross to Pepe Escobar. He's an independent geopolitical analyst and author specializing in Eurasia. Our crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Anya, let me go to you first. We have the 19th anniversary of the illegal invasion of Iraq. The media was all on board for that, but it's nothing compared to what we're seeing right now. I've seen cable news flooded with official propaganda videos. The source is the Ukrainian government with their handlers in Washington. I have never seen such a media campaign rolled out, and dissent is verboten, because if you dissent, you're the enemy. I've never seen it to this extent before. Go ahead, Anya, in Washington.
Neither have I, Peter. And of course, the censoring of the RT YouTube channels on YouTube, the continued denial of service attacks. Every time I usually now try to open the RT webpage, there's some problem accessing it in the United States. That was their first step, the US tech establishment, in preventing us from accessing an alternative view as this conflict progresses. And now it's reached a new absurd phase where daytime talk show hosts on The View, for example, are calling for Tucker Carlson, the most popular television host in the history of this country, to be jailed for treason.
Yep.
Mitt Romney calling, a senator and former presidential candidate, also calling Tucker Carlson's actions of questioning the war narrative on his show treasonous, calling the actions of a former member of Congress, Tulsi Gabbard, treasonous, right, for merely questioning the push to war. And you mentioned the lead up to the Iraq war. We're dealing with many of the same people now in the administration who are responsible for that, for selling that conflict. I mean, look at Victoria Nuland. Her husband, Robert Kagan, is one of the neocon fathers that pushed the lead into the Iraq war. So things in Washington don't change. I will say that at least there is this main one voice on the main. And I know just by mentioning it on RT, there will be some, oh, Russian media is covering what Tucker Carlson says. Well, I think there's a reason that his show is so popular, and that it's the only one that is questioning these narratives, because that's actually what the people in the United States want, Peter. I don't think anyone, that's also why RT was popular for a time in the United States, because when it provided a counter narrative, that's actually what the people are hungry for, and the elites are scared. They don't want them to have that.
I'm glad you brought that up. Let me go to Scotty in Nashville. I mean, this is an elite concern. This is not a concern of you know, if you ask people what they're concerned about inflation and things like that. But this is an elite issue here. And you always know when it's bipartisan, you got to be really worried, because it's usually about war. All right. You know, Scotty, I mean, we have a very pro-war media, and nobody really wants to talk about it, because journalists are scared of other journalists now. In the run-up to the war in Iraq, that wasn't the case. That's the case now. Go ahead, Scotty.
Well, Peter, as we know, there's two sides to every story. And the difference between the lead-up to the Iraqi war and what we're seeing now is that there's a lot more options out there. Back when the Iraqi war was happening, people really only had broadcast news, radio a little bit, print, but it was nowhere near the amount of information that people can consume today that we're having. And so what you're seeing now, along with more information, is more regulation. And here is what is really the scary part on this, especially coming out of the United States of America, which we know the West has played such a huge role in this situation, this regional conflict between Ukraine and Russia, is the fact that the U.S. always has prided itself on being freedom of the press, freedom of speech. And in this case, it is not about that. We are showing that those words are just documents on an old piece of parchment paper. paper, because that is not what is guaranteed. And so I agree, it's not only about the elites, but it's about also making sure that if you are do not agree with the narrative, they are going to censor you, and you do not have those same freedoms that you're supposed to be guaranteed by the documents that make us the United States of America. And I think one other point that I want to say, what we're seeing, though, I think, over the transition over the last 3 weeks, since the beginning of the conflict, however, is the silence that is following those in the mainstream media. See, you're only allowed to have one point of view right now, or else you're going to be canceled. And those that are being silent right now, you can go on and guarantee they agree with those of us that have been silent. They agree with our perspective, but they are now living in fear. They have been bullied into silence to not say what they actually believe because they've seen what happens to those that do.
Yep. You know, Pepe, it's interesting. Unfortunately, one of the elements of my job is that I have to watch cable television. And it's painful, and it's a disability, I think, also. But Pepe, Anya's already brought it up. I see the same faces from 2003 now, and they got it wrong then. They've gotten every other conflict wrong, and now they still have their jobs telling us, you know, how to understand the battlefield, for example. I mean, it's really quite comical and tragic that the same people that got us into these other wars are calling the shots again. Go ahead, Pepe.
Well, we could talk about this for, can you give me 5 hours, Peter?
Yeah.
Look, I am at a very interesting place now. I am between East and West. I am in the European part of Istanbul. I take a ferry boat, or I take the Avrasya tunnel, and in 20 minutes, I am in Asia. And here, information flows. Here, you can watch RT. Here, you can read Sputnik. Here, Telegram is not censored. It's very, very interesting because here it reminds me of the good old days of the Porte Sublime of the Ottoman Empire. You have a flurry of diplomatic action around, and it's the only NATO nation which is trying to, try to organize at least the lineaments of a possible peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. So this means that there is no censorship of information in Turkey, which is something absolutely extraordinary when you compare to the NATO stand sphere. You know, I also live in Europe, and I am afraid when I go back to Europe, I'm probably going to be arrested at Charles de Gaulle Airport. You know? And here, at least, we can talk about, I'm having fantastic conversations with Turkish academics, including about freedom of information. And this, don't forget, this is Erdoganistan, where freedom of information is not exactly a priority. And this is something that you see here. This is something that you see in Iran. This is something that you see in Lebanon, across Central Asia, in parts of Southeast Asia, in the post-Soviet sphere, many of the nations of the post-Soviet sphere. So NATO stand essentially is an island. Don't forget that 70% of the nations of the global south, I would say most of Asia, most of Eurasia, Latin America, Africa, they are not antagonizing Russia. Yeah. They are not demonizing Russia. They did not vote to sanction Russia. This means most of the planet. This means 7/8 of the global markets. Well, they are voting with, let's keep talking with Russia.
Yeah, but Pepe, it's the West that's isolating itself. It doesn't realize that at this point, but that's what's happening here. Anya, let me go back to you in Washington here. The way I look at the media is that they want more war. Anyone that talks about peace and negotiations, oh, you can't do, it's Munich, it's 1930, that's all we ever hear. But you know, they don't seem to care much about the lives of Ukrainians if they don't want to have peace. They don't want to have negotiations. Go ahead, Anya.
No, of course, anyone following developments on the ground, and I'm not a military expert, but it looks as though Russia is going to achieve its goals in the coming weeks. And the only thing stopping it is an escalation, a dramatic escalation from the United States or NATO. And anybody advocating for that escalation is only advocating for more deaths, particularly of the Ukrainian people. And anybody who wants peace should call for direct negotiations without preconditions from the Ukrainian side immediately. But what I would say, as someone, since we're speaking about U.S. media, And how they've covered the conflict, I wanted to just point out the a recent development in the United States, which I think is actually relevant to the Ukraine story, which is the acknowledgement by the New York Times this past week that the Hunter Biden laptop story, which was censored in the lead up to the 2020 election, was actually real, and the contents of the laptop were true. And I think it's very important that we're seeing this now in a mainstream publication. When that happened, the first question I had was, why now? Why are they now suddenly acknowledging something that we all already knew was true? And I genuinely fear, Peter, that there might be people in a position of power right now who are unsatisfied with Biden.
Yes.
Biden hasn't gone as far as he would, as the permanent war state, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, the extremists in Washington. He hasn't gone as far as they would like. And so there may be an effort to scare him a little bit, to push him, even perhaps remove him. Can you imagine the disaster that would come in if Kamala Harris were to replace him?
If they could do it to Trump, they can easily do it to Biden. Okay. And I think it's very interesting. It's the 50 people that signed that letter. It was in disinformation. They're still riding high. Okay. No consequences for that whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they probably got cable deals. Okay. It's really interesting, and I agree with you. I think this is a gambit. A gambit that is going to try to push against Biden, or at least to make him much more robust. You know, for a guy that's been around for a long time that isn't very smart, he knows escalating it is only going to make things worse.
If you remember, according to what we know about the Obama administration and the Syria conflict, it was Biden, allegedly, who pushed Obama not to enforce his so-called red line in Syria.
Okay.
As flawed as he is.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the information war. Stay with RT.
The so-called enhanced interrogation techniques used by U.S. officials were basically designed as techniques to break down the human mind.
If you force a human being to stay in a certain position, it doesn't take very long for the pain involved to become absolutely excruciating. But nobody's laying a finger on you. You are doing it to yourself.
We started adopting those techniques when I was stationed in Mosul. Among them were stress positions, sleep deprivation, inducing hypothermia.
There's already beginning to be evidence that these old techniques are now being used on immigrants and children. Whatever you do in war comes home.
Nobody has been held accountable for the torture that happened in the past.
The moral authority that made America a world leader sacrificed for the chimera of effective interrogation.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the information war. Okay, let's go back to Scotty in Nashville. Scotty, in looking at coverage of the conflict, I'm really quite astounded. We're television people. We work in multimedia, and I keep hearing these reports about killings and slaughters and all this, but there are hardly ever any pictures of anything. We're just supposed to take it on a cardinal of faith. And I don't know how many other people aren't noticing that, because it's being driven by emotion more than anything else. I'm astounded that these so-called correspondents on the ground, they editorialize. They don't even give you information. They editorialize. They tell you what they think is going on, and they're all grand strategists, apparently. We didn't get that really in Iraq, but we have it now. Go ahead, Scotty.
And the majority of them had no idea where Ukraine was or what the various region was prior to 3 weeks ago. And now all of a sudden they're experts. You know, in this coverage that we're seeing, we're seeing the absence not only of talks of what realistic peace would look like, but we're also seeing the absence of facts. and history. And it does not take a lot to research the background. And I think that's why it was so important for them to remove voices like RT and others, make sure that they were censored, because we've been covering these stories. We've been covering the region for so many years. And as long as you take those people out and you make them to be irrelevant, according to at least the elite's standard, then you also eliminate the information and the facts that they are able to show, which goes completely against this narrative. But you're right. You see these correspondents that I was already very shocked just prior to this conflict happening. While there in Kiev, you still had people sitting in the cafes. You had people going to work. Everything was business as normal. And yet one mainstream media outlet had already an entire crew set up in various areas of the cities. And let me just point out, when you're talking about war, one of the first things you do in normal situations, you take out these public utilities. And in the modern day of warfare, that includes the internet. However, Russia has not taken them out initially going in. Why? Because I do believe Russia wanted the world to see, hey, let's show you what's happening on the ground. If there's such horrible things happening, you would be out there. The opportunities are there, and yet they're not. Instead, we're getting such propaganda as violinists sitting in bunkers in the subways, and we're getting baby carriages being lined up along platforms that we're now finding out are staged. There's not really been an ounce of truth that has come out of this war from the Ukrainian position that has actually been true, that has caused. And yet, just like we've seen with the Hunter Biden laptop, the apologies, the admittance to truth does not happen till years later. The damage has already been done, and it comes with just a small little byline that, unless it is a part of the narrative and the agenda exposed, as we're seeing with at least the Hunter Biden laptop, it will never get the attention it deserves. Definitely to correct the problems that it's caused.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of these. You know, remember the incubator story, you know, and Saddam and all that. That it just seems to be, you know, writ large here. Pepe, you know, one of the things I find personally really frustrating about this is that I did program after program after program saying the situation is untenable, everybody. Something has to give. Real negotiations have to start. The Russians have their demands. They're serious people. They're not bluffing. And then it happened, and everyone is surprised. And I did this for months after months. You know, Scotty pointed it out. I mean, you and I have been doing this for years, okay, talking about the frictions there and the possibilities for conflict. And all of a sudden, it's out of the blue because there's no context. And this has been done purposely. There is no context for this conflict. I'm very upset there's a conflict here. But I knew it was coming because of the frictions and the divisions and the demands. And NATO, oh, no, we're just a defensive alliance. That's all they ever said. That wasn't good enough. And see what happened. Pepe.
Well, absence of context, number one. But why? Because if you explain a little bit of the extremely complex context, Western people are going to start thinking about it, especially Europeans, not so much Americans, because they cannot even place Ukraine geographically, not to mention historically. So this is very, very complex because we will have to start 30 years ago, fall of the Soviet Union, what happened in Russia in the 90s, election of Putin in 2000, Putin's speech at the Munich Security Conference in 2007, meetings between the NATO Council and Russia that were not going anywhere, Maidan in 2014, the absolutely invisible suffering of Donbass people in Donetsk and Luhansk for 8 years. I was in Donetsk in 2015, and I saw for myself, nobody in Western media did that, with very, very few exceptions. When I was there, I was with Serbians, Slovenians, for instance, you know, no mainstream media from Europe or the US. So those of us who've actually been there, and then some other reporters that actually went to Donbass this past few years, we perfectly understand the reasoning behind Putin's decision and the leadership in Russia. And there are three main reasons for everything that is happening now, the three immediate reasons. The imminent genocide that was going to be committed by the Ukrainian forces in a blitzkrieg against Donbass, and this was corroborated by documents that they found in Ukraine after the start of Operation Z and by SVR, Russian military intel. Number two, the biolabs connection. which was, once again, now we have documents proving it and were presented by Russia at the UN. And number three, the possibility that Ukraine would completely eviscerate the 1994 Budapest Agreement and go for nuclear weapons. These are three red lines for Russia, but extremely serious. And they would be three red lines for any major or even minor power. This is absolutely out of context. And the denazification and demilitarization of Operation Z, people in the West, they don't even understand what it means because they don't understand the meaning of Nazism for the Soviet Union and Russia that lost 27 million people in World War II.
Well, Pepe, what's even more infuriating is that these figures that have these fascist ideas, they have influence in the Ukrainian government, and they have strong connections with the West. When John McCain was going there, you know, on the Maidan, you know, shaking hands with some of the most odious people alive, in my opinion, and they just deny this here. We're rapidly running out of time. Anya, I think all of us are really concerned because we see this theme of false flag. We're waiting for a false flag. You know, I mean, that's projection, in my opinion, okay? And these people that do the false flags, you know, they have this liking for chemicals. It was no coincidence that Victoria Nuland mentioned the bio labs, okay? And then Marco Rubio, like the buffoon that he is, you know, says, oh, but if weapons like that are used, it's the Russian fault. Of course. Okay. I mean, I was embarrassed for this level of stupidity of those two. Go ahead, Anya.
I totally agree, Peter. We saw the script laid out with the Syria conflict whenever the Syrian military was poised to make a decisive victory. For some reason, Assad would just go and commit a pointless chemical attack and then the U.S. would bomb him. But no, I'm saying that because as Russia nears victory, I do fear, also as the Ukrainian military becomes more and more, especially the extremist elements within it become more and more desperate, that they will, I mean, they already tried. Look at the theater bombing in Mariupol. We've covered that at the Gray Zone. It was a complete deception, but they tried to blame Russian shelling on the bombing of a theater there. This is all in order to drum up support for war, and then the fact that they've banned RT and these other outlets that might question it is in order to prep the public for accepting the narrative.
Yeah, Scotty, what really bothers me is this propaganda war. Do you think the American people have any idea what going to war with Russia actually means?
Oh, I think they do. I mean, they've watched The Hunt for Red October enough to realize that this is obviously more than just what Hollywood can come up with in Apocalypse Now. But here's even the scarier part, is what Americans don't realize. It's not only going to war with Russia, but they've really made the lines more defined between East and West. And that is not good, because all you're doing is uniting the side that you don't want to be the enemy with. And I think Americans realize that side. And what, like someone once told me, that America is kind of like the teenager on the world scale. And if anybody's ever raised teenagers, they understand that just how up and down that can be. That does not create for a stable society. And I think Americans are going to realize, just like what we've done with the coronavirus, how much of our freedoms have been impeded based on, all under the justification for some sort of, and in this case, war would be the thought. So I think Americans will slowly wake up. But by the time they wake up, unfortunately, Peter, those rights, those freedoms will already have been long gone.
I think they already are gone, unfortunately. Pepe, I have to mention China in all of this here. I mean, because I'm an avid reader of your work here. How are the Chinese interpreting all of this?
It's absolutely fascinating because it's a national consensus. They absolutely understand that for Russia, this was a matter of national security, because the information in China is available not only through the major think tanks like Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, Tsinghua University, Fudan University, etc., but it filters through Xinhua to the main publications, to Global Times, internal and external, China Daily, etc. So the Chinese, not only the Chinese in mainland who only read in Mandarin because this information is on Weibo, for instance, but the Chinese of the diaspora who do business all across Eurasia, they understand context, because context is provided for them, completely unlike the situation across NATO-STAN. And the fact that the comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Russia Do you think that Putin did not explicitly explain to Xi a few days before that Operation Z would take place? Of course he did.
Of course he did.
Because the level, at the highest level, and I'm not talking only about Lavrov with Wang Yi, I'm talking about the leaders themselves, because they call themselves all the time, you know. And it's a concerted effort. And the best, I would say the best illustration is what's going to happen within the next few days. The Eurasian Economic Union, which is led by Russia and China, they are devising the real explosive development ahead of us, which is a new monetary financial system, which is going to be basically based on gold and with yuan as the overarching currency. It's going to start with a Russia-China-Eurasian Union partnership, and it's going to be expanded to the rest of Eurasia. This is being discussed at the absolute highest level. And it was already prepared, of course. These discussions about bypassing the dollar, they started in the 2000s, inside the BRICS, when Hu Jintao, Putin, and Lula from Brazil were already discussing it 15 years ago. And now it's going to happen in front of us. And the most strategic... give me 15 seconds.
Pepe, I have like 10 seconds left here, or almost out of time.
But okay,
I'm going to end on the point
West
that
you committed suicide.
We're in agreement, because what we're seeing is the destruction of the dollar, and it was intentional. It could have been avoidable, and this is what happens when you politicize a currency. It's just future historians will scratch their head. That's all the time we have here. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Nashville, and in Istanbul. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.